Come out, Virginia, don't let me wait. You Catholic girls start much too late. All the sooner or later it comes down to fate. I might as well will be the one. Well, they showed you a statue, told you to pray. They built you a temple and locked you away. Ah, but they never told you the price that you pay. The things that you might have done. Only the good.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Ask the Blood Detective. I'm your host, Dr. Michael Wald, and this is a show where we get to explore together how you can prevent and delay the onset of early disease, and disease that simply cuts not only lifespan short, but quality of life. For those of you who have missed many of the other Ask the Blood Detective radio shows, you can find those all up on my blog, on my website, at www.integratednutritionny.com. Or you can go to blooddetective.com and look under the blog section for all sorts of topics. Now, today's topic I call the new normal. And the reason I call it the new normal is because I think that healthcare has gone a bit too far comparing us to what are known as normal ranges on blood work. And because sometimes those normal ranges are, by definition, normal, doctors scratch their heads and say, well, you know, your labs are normal. I don't know why you're tired. I don't know why you have eczema. I don't know why you're depressed. I don't know why you're overweight. I don't know why your memory's terrible. I don't know why you have these digestive difficulties. Your testing is normal. Well, if you feel a certain way and your testing is normal, I think that common sense, our blood detective common sense would tell us that we may need a new normal to feel better than we do now. But even that concept, which, as I've stated it, might seem reasonable to the average individual, it tends to fall on deaf ears in traditional medicine. Now, that's a generalization, of course, because there are certainly physicians that understand the concept of a different normal, that an individual might feel much better, for example, when their thyroid hormone, their TSH, which is actually a pituitary hormone, but it's part of a thyroid blood test. But when the TSH is on the lower end of the normal range, a person might be more energetic, their metabolic rate might be faster, their cholesterol levels could be lower. But if your TSH falls within the normal range, anywhere in that normal range is considered normal, even though a different normal or a new normal might help you feel better in all those ways I just mentioned, plus many others. So what I'd like to do today is discuss a bit further this concept of what is normal or average versus optimal, and what you can do to make sure that your health is managed based on comparing you to optimal, for example, optimal ranges of blood results as opposed to normal or average ones. I mean, think about it. The average health of a 40, 50, 60-year-old is not so great. Most people are affected with increased cardiovascular risk, high cholesterol levels, high blood pressure, high blood sugar, arthritis, fatigue, overweight, all kinds of issues. And they're told, well, this is normal for someone your age, and or your blood work is normal or acceptable. And I would suggest to all of you, the new listeners to Ask the Blood Detective and the old listeners, that that is unacceptable. If you compare yourself to a higher standard, you might get there. You might not get there, on the other hand, but you'll probably get much further than if you settle for normal or average. And that's what the general so-called healthcare industry focuses on. Allopathic medicine compares you to normal blood ranges, for example. Not necessarily optimal blood ranges. Even the conversation with most physicians on optimal versus normal ends on a very negative note. Doctors simply look at the tests. If the testing on the piece of paper is normal and you don't feel good, well, then you've got a problem. Maybe you're depressed. Have you heard of that before? If I had a nickel for every time A patient told me that when their doctor couldn't find what was wrong with them, they were labeled as crazy or having anxiety or having depression or something like that. And who wouldn't be anxious or depressed if they don't get well? But my point here is that there are different ways of viewing the same results. And that, namely, is by comparing you to more optimal ranges and not merely normal ranges. So I would further suggest to you that if you don't feel well in any way, then probably your blood work should be at a different normal place if, in fact, you were told your lab tests were normal. Now, I should mention this too. Some of you are thinking, well, I do have some abnormalities on my blood work, but my doctor says they weren't particularly important, that they don't have anything to do with how I'm feeling. Well, that may or may not be true, but from a holistic perspective, everything relates to everything else. So if you have any abnormalities on your lab work, that means you have abnormalities that when I compare you or your doctor compares you to 95% of other men or women your age, they don't have those abnormalities. Let me back up for a second. Blood work that you have had done many times throughout your lifestyle, as I mentioned, compare you to men or women in a certain age range. And those ranges of cholesterol, glucose, calcium, for example, all of these tests, blood sugar, have been developed based on average population groups that were seemingly well, these individuals were seemingly well, when they donated blood that was averaged in, giving us these ranges. Now, I don't think it's unreasonable that a person might actually have all kinds of health problems but may not know it, and they go and donate blood that is mixed into the average ranges that you're compared to throughout the course of your life. Now, here's something else that makes this whole comparing you to average men or women that are seemingly well, which is the ranges, or I should say are the ranges on your blood test. What's also very wrong with this, in my opinion, is that the average individual does not exist. So why would we want to compare ourselves to average people? Maybe comparing ourselves to a healthier version of ourselves, or at least to a younger version of ourselves, might have us feel better when we change our diets or take nutritional supplements or modify our exercise activity to try to get our blood chemistry to a place that is more consistent with when we were younger and healthier. Or at least, and or I should say in addition, comparing you to studies of much healthier people's blood and how that differs from just the averages. Let me give you an example. We're all familiar with cholesterol levels. Cholesterol levels, the range for most labs is between 0 and 200. I can't help but laugh just naming that range because it's ridiculously wide. But what it is saying literally is that anywhere that you fall within a 0 to 200 would give you the same cardiovascular risk. Now, if I asked a physician that question, doc, if I have my cholesterol at a 125, does that give me the same risk of cardiovascular disease as a 200? That doctor is going to say probably not. And that doctor would be right, in my opinion. But laboratory work suggests that because the range is 0 to 200. Now, here's something you may not know. The first part you probably do, and it's namely this, that a cholesterol level of 200 or higher does seem to increase cardiovascular risk. One's chances of dying prematurely of heart attack or stroke, for example. On the other hand, a cholesterol level less than 160 has been shown in some studies to increase one's risk of certain cancers. And you might say, what do you mean? I've only thought of high cholesterol. Low cholesterol is bad? Sure it is. Well, the first thing I should say is that cholesterol has some very important functions in the body. Cholesterol is considered what's called the mother hormone, and that cholesterol is the starting point from which the body can make many other essential hormones that have hundreds, if not thousands, of other essential functions in the body. Cholesterol forms a hormone called pregnenolone, which I know sounds a lot like progesterone, and that's because pregnenolone, which is formed from cholesterol, makes progesterone. And progesterone makes testosterone. And testosterone makes the three types of estrogens that are produced in the body. And by the way, testosterone forms something called DHEA, which is an adrenal hormone. So you may not have known before that cholesterol is quite important. If we have a deficiency of cholesterol, which is usually caused, by the way, because the liver is underfunctioning and does not produce cholesterol. And if it underproduces cholesterol, it will not make these sex steroid hormones, namely pregnenolone, progesterone, testosterone, and estrogen, which we need for a variety of functions. Of course, too much or too little of any of those hormones is a problem as well. So the point I'm trying to make here is that if you're on the low end of cholesterol, you may not make these various hormones, and that might affect your bone density, your fertility, your energy level, your healing, even predispose you to cancer in different ways. If, on the other hand, your cholesterol is too high, that's certainly a problem in the ways that most of us are familiar with. Now, if we know, if we can accept that high cholesterol is no good and cholesterol that is too low is also no good, then maybe there is an optimal range that cholesterol should be somewhere in that 0 to 200 range. Now, before I continue with this new normal concept, what's that optimal place in the ranges of any blood tests that might be better than the so-called just being normal? I want to say that this is something that has to be figured out on an individual basis. So I'm going to give you another example that practically all of you have heard of, vitamin D. Most of us know that vitamin D is extremely important now. There isn't an area of medicine that is now unfamiliar with the importance of vitamin D. Although I'm sad to say that many individuals, many practitioners, do not know how to properly test for and supplement for vitamin D. So let's talk about the test so you know it. You know what the normal vitamin D level might be and what an optimal vitamin D level might be. And the point of all of this is so that as we go through various tests and you get the sense that, yeah, there's an optimal, better than normal place that my chemistry might need to be so I can feel much better than I feel, you might start to move your blood work through diet, lifestyle, and nutrition when possible to get you into the optimal range. So back to vitamin D. The range of vitamin D on a blood test that is based on seemingly well people who donate their blood averages between 30 and 100. That's what it'll say on a blood test. Now, there's a special kind of a study called a meta-analysis. And what they do with a meta-analysis is they look at all the vitamin D studies, or any studies, and then they rule out studies that were done just poorly. And by the way, most studies are done poorly. So what most of what we base science on to say it's scientific and well proven is based on lousy science. But a meta-analysis tries to clarify what the good science portion means. So when it comes to vitamin D, this meta-analysis averaged out the ranges of vitamin D relative to the lowest risk of dying prematurely and the greatest risk of improving your health span and your quality of life. And do you know what number the vitamin D turns out to be that's optimal? The answer is a 70. But the range is 30 to 100. So many doctors say, well, your range is, your vitamin D level is 30, you're fine. Some doctors know a little bit more and they'll say, well, yeah, 30 is okay, 35 acceptable, 40 is in the normal range, but I'd be more comfortable with a 50. Well, we don't have to guess at this because the meta-analysis has been done. We know that, and here's what I haven't told you, I'm going to say it straight out. The higher normal your vitamin D level, so the closer it is to 100 and between 70 and 100, there is a reduction in overall cause of death and an improvement in quality of life. And the reason why such a broad statement can be made about the importance of vitamin D is because practically every cell of every tissue, every organ, every gland, and every body system requires vitamin D. This can't be said of some other nutrients. And now some of you are thinking, well, you know, I take vitamin D, I'm good, I take it. Yeah, but do you take enough so that your vitamin D level is between 70 and 100? And if you're thinking, well, I don't really know because I had one baseline vitamin D level, but I never checked it again. Well, that's pretty consistent with lousy healthcare. If you're taking vitamin D, and if you've been given a prescription for vitamin D3, which usually is 50,000 units of vitamin D once a week for between 4 and 8 weeks, but you've never been asked to come back for a retest, well, that's just malpractice. That's just terrible healthcare. So we have established now that the optimal place for your vitamin D level to be is between 70 and 100, not merely anywhere between 30 and 100. So that one change in your chemistry can mean a lot in terms of your lifespan and your health span. And then prior to vitamin D, we discussed cholesterol. But I didn't tell you that the optimal cholesterol level is probably between 165 and 185. That range seems to be associated with far less heart disease than simply falling within the average range of 0 to 200. Let me give you another very important example of optimal range, and it has to do with a test that's part of a thyroid panel that your PCP or certainly your endocrinologist or your family doctor might perform. It's called TSH or thyroid stimulating hormone. So here's how it works. You need thyroid hormone for your metabolic rate. If your thyroid hormone level is too low, then you'll probably gain weight, you might be depressed, you might retain fluid, you might lose hair, your skin might be dry, your bones might become brittle, your cholesterol levels might increase. The list goes on and on for symptoms of hypo, which refers to low thyroid hormones. Now, as thyroid hormones reduce, that other test I just mentioned that's part of your thyroid testing called TSH will tend to increase. Now, if your thyroid hormones are in the ranges on the blood test for men or women your age, and you have every single symptom I just mentioned, believe it or not, most doctors will look at you right in the eyeballs and say, well, no, your testing is normal. There's nothing I can do for you. And then you might say something like, but doc, I've read that these symptoms can be from sluggish thyroid, from hypothyroidism. And the doctor will say, well, it doesn't show up on the tests. So I'm going to let you in on a little secret, which has to do with this whole new normal concept, an optimal concept. Before one of your blood tests or practically any other assessment test that you can think of becomes abnormal, it's normal, right? I mean, think about it. By the time your mammography, if you're a woman, shows any trace of breast cancer, you've had an average of 5 years worth of abnormal cellular cancerous growth before the MRI's sensitivity picks up anything. On the other hand, if you palpate your breasts, by the time you feel something, again, an average of 5 years have gone by before you can feel anything. So my point here is this. If we have these ranges that we look at on blood work, that if we're too high, we're abnormal, or too low, before we're too high or before we're too low, I'll give you an example, like glucose, we don't want to be hyperglycemic, meaning high blood sugar, and be a diabetic, but we also don't want, on the other end of the spectrum, to be hypoglycemic or have low blood sugar. But you might feel much better with a blood sugar of around 80. 80 seems to be, on average, the best place to be. Now, what's really interesting that most physicians do not know, but it is found in the endocrinology scientific literature, is that if you have a normal blood sugar of 85, and let's say you got that blood work done on a day that your doctor did not tell you to fast, so non-fasting blood glucose of 85, we now know that even though it was non-fasting, a number of 85 tends to be highly predictive of you being a pre-diabetic. Now, the word pre suggests to some people that you've got some time before you become a diabetic, and that may or may not be true, but the word pre also seems to mean to some people, and this is not true, by the way, that you don't have any damage from the high blood sugar. So if you're a pre-diabetic, that's when most of the damage is happening. By the time you're diagnosed as a diabetic, you've had years, even decades, of damage of high blood sugar causing hardening of the arteries, damaging your kidneys, damaging your heart in various ways, damaging your eyes potentially. So this, once again, makes my point that there may be an optimal place where you should be in terms of blood glucose, just like we explained for cholesterol, 165 to 185 for cholesterol. An optimal place you should be for vitamin D between 70 and 100, closer to 70. And now for glucose, where I'm saying for non-fasting, should be roughly 85. And again, if you doubt what I'm saying, email me at info@blooddetective.com and say, Dr. Wald, I need some more proof. Send me some science that backs up what you're saying, and I will email it to you. And a lot of the science is posted already on my website. And again, the website is integratednutritionny.com. Or the easier site to remember is blooddetective.com. And just go on the blog and the search bar. So let's back up. So we are said to have a healthcare system in the United States. But we do not have a healthcare system. We have a disease care system. And this difference in semantics, I don't use to be cute. I say it because it's a fact. Physicians, and I went to medical school. I completed medical school. I earned my MD diploma. And I can tell you that in medicine, we learn about diseases and how to manage them with surgery, you know, various procedures, medications, and very, very scant education in health. In fact, the average medical school in the United States has less than 30 hours of nutrition education. And what's really sad about that, I'll never forget a quote, I'm going to paraphrase out of Harvard, about the pathetic nature of health and nutrition education in medical schools. And what they said at Harvard was that the average individual who watches 4 hours of television per day probably knows more nutrition than their average physician. And to make matters worse, because I know a lot of doctors, very smart, well-intentioned doctors, but they simply don't know nutrition. When it's presented to them, it's simply not something they focus on because it's just not what they've learned. So many patients come to me frustrated, complaining, how come my doctor doesn't think of prevention? Why don't they understand the importance of diet? How come they hit the ceiling when I mention taking vitamins or minerals or enzymes or herbs or any nutraceuticals? Well, the answer to that is simple. Like any other individual who is closed-minded, and I don't say that in an adverse way, if a person thinks and practices a certain way of healthcare and they're presented with something called nutrition, which is completely out of their, you know, their scope of practice and their education, many will say, it can't be true. If it was, I would have learned it in medical school. I've actually had doctors say that to me. So I teach doctors and healthcare providers of all types in the United States and abroad. And when I teach them nutrition, their eyes just light up. And when we're teaching nutrition at a healthcare symposium where we're providing information that has an evidence base to it, that means there's science behind it. Again, these doctors just did not know it was there. So most of the time, in my experience, when a doctor says to you, this nutrition stuff doesn't work, what they really mean is, I don't have any training in it. I have no idea what I'm talking about. So I stick with what I know, and you should stick with what I know too, because you're seeing me and you're counting on my opinion. So I say to my patients who are so frustrated, I say something like, listen, how can we expect your physician to change the way he or she thinks if they don't have the training? So it really is why I do the show Ask the Blood Detective, because this is a show that will help teach you to think a bit differently and will arm you with more information so you can make better healthcare choices. The first distinction I've made on this show today is that there is normal and that there is better than normal. Most physicians are content with normalcy, where blood detectives like you and I are only content with optimal. You know, as a 51-year-old man, I do not compare my blood work to other unhealthy 51-year-old, you know, average 51-year-olds. It's not acceptable to me. I want to be able to run marathons. I want to be able to jump up and down. I want to be able to lift weights and do martial arts and have no limitations. My goal in life, by shooting for the better than normal or the optimal, or shooting for the new normal for a 51-year-old, the new normal for whatever your age is so that I can extend what is called the non-disability stage of life. People say a lot to me, Dr. Wolf, I'm not interested in living longer, but everyone seems to be interested in living better. And sometimes that does mean living longer. So the new normal is a standard that I'm suggesting to you that you might really take into your consciousness and have you not settle for when your doctors or you are told by anyone that this is just how you're aging, you're this age, you should start to lose your memory, your muscles should become weaker, your energy will start to fade, your joints will start to break down. Who says? Who said that? You know, anyone who draws conclusions based on our current level of knowledge at this place in civilization is delusional to the fact that at any point in science, it's only as smart as it is at that point. So you might say, well, if that's true, what do I do? Because I keep hearing new information from week to week, this miracle diet or this miracle supplement or this cancer cure. Well, I think I have at least part of a solution. What I do with those that work with me is I compare their blood work to different ranges of normal that are other than the normal ranges. I, again, mentioned several of them so far during the show. Vitamin D levels should be at least a 70 or between 70 and 100. Anything less than 70 is not optimal and is not associated with the maximum reduction of morbidity and mortality. Cholesterol levels between the range of 165 to 185 is far better than anything below 165 or anything better than 185. Let me give you a new example. Let's say magnesium levels. Magnesium is a mineral that's involved in over 500 different biochemical reactions and still counting as we learn more in science. Magnesium is needed for a variety of essential functions in the body, from regulating blood pressure to muscle tone to energy. Magnesium even has antioxidant functions. It's needed for memory. It works with neurotransmitters. It can help all kinds of mental, emotional problems. The list goes on and on. But let's say, like someone just told me this morning, well, I asked my doctor to measure my magnesium levels because I thought I could use magnesium because I was, because I have a history of vasospasm, my arteries spasm. And this lady was right. Magnesium is a muscle, is a blood vessel relaxant. So it tends to relax spasm, improving blood flow. But her doctor did the magnesium test and said, well, your magnesium is normal. You don't need it. There are studies, and I can tell you from also, again, my decades of experience in nutrition, that many individuals require a level of magnesium higher than the normal range on a blood test that's comparing you to average individuals and not necessarily healthy individuals. Now are you following this, right? It's starting to add up, starting to make sense. So that individual, this woman, for example, might require a level of magnesium that is actually elevated, higher than the average amount of 95% of other women. Because remember, the blood tests for magnesium or cholesterol or TSH or vitamin D or glucose, some of the tests we've mentioned, are the averages of 95% of seemingly well people. But who says that you might not need more or higher levels of certain things like magnesium? So you can see that a new normal is desperately needed if you do not want to settle for the current level of health that you have. And just to review an important test that people ask me all the time, and I started to discuss earlier, the TSH test, the thyroid stimulating hormone. The TSH level that's associated with a better sense of overall well-being and energy and lower cholesterol, for example, is 1.18. But the range of TSH is 0.4 on the low end all the way up to about 5.4 on the other end. Now, by the way, different laboratories have different averages because they use different population groups. They're somewhat close, but we still want to shoot for the optimal ranges. So basically, if you've been told that your testing is normal and you don't feel well, then you might want to consider a new normal. On the other hand, if you've been told that your tests are, you've got some abnormalities and that's sort of how things are and you have to deal with the level of quality of life that you have now and you don't feel well, again, consider a new normal. One of the ways that I try to figure out what a new normal might be for people who seek me out and for myself is through trial and error. So let's say I want to improve someone's memory. I might give them amino acids because amino acids from the diet are responsible for forming approximately 80% of the neurotransmitters in the brain. And neurotransmitters are chemicals that allow for thoughts, feelings, emotion, memory to happen. Now, someone's total protein, that's a blood test, might be in the normal range. And amino acids are made from proteins. Now, a doctor who's looking at the total protein might say, well, you won't benefit from any more protein for your memory because your total protein is normal. All that means is your total protein is normal when you're compared to 95% of people your age, which probably have memory problems. So that so-called normal range might be perpetuating the very problem you want to remedy, namely a better memory. So I might give someone proteins or amino acids, and their total protein might be on the high end of normal. Maybe it was on the lower end of normal. Maybe it was right in the middle of the normal range. But we find out through trial and error that a higher normal total protein gives them better memory. So that's an example of a new normal. let's talk about the levels of vitamin C on a blood test. Now, first of all, practically no one listening to this show, based on my experience, has had their vitamin C levels examined on blood. If you ask your doctor to do this, your doctor will say, oh, it's probably going to be normal. Do you eat oranges? And you might say yes or no, and they'll somehow avoid doing the test. That's why if you want to know what your new normal are, or your new normals are, you need to insist on having certain tests done. And here's why vitamin C is so important, and how you want to know the difference between a normal vitamin C and your new normal vitamin C. And it has to do with the area of cardiovascular disease, which is still the number one killer of men and women, and also cancer. Studies have demonstrated, many, many dozens and dozens of studies, which can be found on the National Library of Medicine. So when doctors say to you, no studies have been done, you say, well, they're at the National Library of Medicine. And you can look up those studies yourself by going on the National Library of Medicine website. It's free. You simply put in vitamin C blood levels and cancer, vitamin C blood levels and cardiovascular disease, or any other health problem you want, and you will probably have hundreds of articles come up, possibly even thousands. So here's my point. There seems to be far less cancer and far less cardiovascular disease when people have vitamin C levels that are on the high end of the normal range or actually higher than the normal range. You know, one of the analogies that I tend to use that sometimes helps people understand this better than normal range is the following. You can imagine that an athlete who is a distance runner might require higher carbohydrate intake so that they can run long distances. Or a weightlifter or someone who's just very fit might require a higher intake of more protein if they want to build muscle. So when it comes to diet, there may be the average diet, whatever that means, and then there's the average diet or the ideal diet that a pregnant woman might eat or a child might have, or a postmenopausal woman or a premenopausal woman or an obese man or an obese woman. So can't you see, and I'm sure you can, that this concept of average really needs to be thrown away. It's what I call a wastebasket term. And the term wastebasket term is a term used in medicine to refer to nonsense labels, like diagnoses. So when it comes to blood work, a long-distance athlete or a pregnant woman or an older individual susceptible to infections, or a middle-aged person with a prostate problem, or a middle-aged woman with a fertility issue, or migraines, or eczema, or overweight, might need some other normal than the average normal. Let me make this a little bit more interesting. If it's not interesting enough, let me ask you a couple of true and false questions. So when your doctor tells you that your blood work is perfectly normal, even though you don't feel well, is that all in your head, do you think? True or false? Of course the answer is false. Your lab work can look normal, but you have to realize a few things. Your doctor's laboratory workup on you, first of all, may be incomplete, or it's very commonly just limited by the medical specialty of the doctor. So I'll have patients that'll say to me, Dr. Wald, I've had every test, on the planet done, but meanwhile, they've had some testing done within the specialty of that doctor. So you might have to see 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 10 different specialists that sometimes it might take to uncover something that's just not part of the regular blood profile that your doctor happens to do. On the other hand, your blood work, you could have been told your blood work is normal, but it may have been misinterpreted, may have been read wrong. And as I've been saying this whole time, your doctor may just be simply comparing you to the average population of men or women your age and not the healthy population. So a little bit of review here with these. I'm going to go ahead here with a few more true and false questions for you. So true or false, a blood sugar level like glucose you know, which you'll find on any typical laboratory test, represents the average of a normal person in a population and not necessarily your healthy range. So let me say it again. So the blood sugar range on a blood test of 65 to 110, if you're found in that, does that mean you definitely don't have a blood sugar problem? It doesn't mean that. But the 65 to 100 range is representing how you compare it to average. So, you know, the ranges for all tests you'll find on blood, I've said a few times, are based on averages, and they may not represent optimal ranges for individuals who want to get healthy. And again, this is should not really be surprising when you think about it, because the ranges on blood tests were designed to detect disease when it's extreme, but not necessarily find those problems when they're early or when they're just hidden within the normal ranges. Bottom line, if you're not feeling well and your doctor says that your test results are normal, maybe you're being compared to the wrong population of people, namely to the average and not the healthy. Here's a true and false question that drives me crazy sometimes. So true or false? Because you have certain health problems, you know, you've seen, let's say, a specialist, someone that has impressed upon you how they're the greatest in the field, because some of you will say to me, oh, Dr. Walter, have you heard about this or that? Half the time I won't, more than half the time. The doctors seem to need to impress upon people how expert they are, but sometimes they're not. And they've left you with the impression that they've done every test that you can imagine to look for your health issues. But it's unfortunately, it's not always true. I find that many essential tests are simply not done. And why is that? Because any medical specialist is generally limited or chooses to limit him or herself within testing of that specialty. And by doing that, they cut themselves off from looking at other things. Now, this is the structure, this is the design of traditional medicine. It's very compartmentalized. In holistic circles, at least those of us who know how to read blood work, it's important for us to examine hormonal tests along with gastrointestinal tests, along with nutrition tests, along with immune tests. I think you get the picture. All at once, so you can see how things work together. And oftentimes, the problems are just right there for you to see when any practitioner, no matter how smart they are, but if they limit to themselves, they limit themselves to just their specialty, can miss things. Let me digress to some other types of medical tests, like coronary artery sonograms, where a person can have their blood flow through the carotid artery sonogram, where an ultrasound can measure the flow through the carotid artery. It can measure the potential for plaquing. So I'll commonly have patients come in, they'll generally be about 50 years old and above, and they'll say to me, yeah, I had this carotid artery sonogram test done, and I was told it was normal. And then I ask to see the results because I'd like to see things for myself. And oftentimes, the test will show that there is, in fact, some plaquing. There is, in fact, some issues with flow, blood flow. And there might even be some calcification or even thickening of the carotid arteries. But the doctor, usually the cardiologist, might consider these tests normal for the age group. And physicians will not generally treat those issues I just mentioned, other than saying exercise and eat right, which is on the surface very good advice, unless the person is having symptoms. Let's say their blood flow is affected to the point where they have lightheadedness or dizziness. Then they might be put on a medication for that. But my point is that many problems or degenerative conditions like those I just described for the carotid arteries might be considered normal for a certain group of men or women of a certain age. But if that were me, I would not be okay with those so-called normal or expected findings. So I work with patients to try to reverse these findings with nutrition, primarily focusing on diet, with the proper exercise, and very few people really seem to know how to exercise for particular health problems. And then an intelligent use of various nutrients based upon laboratory work, based upon questionnaires, an interview with a person, and specific in terms of dosing based on the metabolic rate of an individual. Let me say that again, because you may not have heard that. Metabolic rate should be considered when determining a lot of things in terms of your diet and nutrition. If you want to lose weight and you know your metabolic rate, then you need to consume a certain amount of calories that is lower than the amount that kept you or keeps you at the weight you're at now. On the other hand, I also do a test called a body composition test that measures not only metabolic rate, which helps determine caloric needs for different health goals, and also nutritional supplement dosing. You know, not every person requires the same dosing of nutritional supplements, but most people just take the amount on a bottle, whether they weigh 200 pounds, 300 pounds, or 115 pounds. And they wonder why they're not getting better. They're taking the right stuff. Most individuals that I speak with pay no attention to metabolic rate when figuring out their nutrition. And I'm telling you, that's a mistake. So here's the normal compared to optimal. You might be told that you're of normal weight. You, in fact, might weigh the same as you did in college, assuming it was a healthy weight. And you might brag about that to me, because this has happened. Then I'll do a body composition on a patient, and I'll find out that, yeah, if I take their word for it, they weigh the same thing they weighed in college when they were healthy, except they have a body fat percentage that is too high. Their total weight doesn't tell me the difference between how much of your body, what percentage of your body is lean mass, which is the healthy part of your body, as compared to water and fat, but a body composition test can. So you might be told by your doctor that you have a normal body composition because you're of normal weight relative to your height for, let's say, a white individual. On the other hand, when you do the body composition, we know that there is a new normal where it's not just your total weight, but what percentage of your weight comes from lean body tissue, fat, and water. And generally speaking, as we age, we lose lean body mass. That's a bad thing. And think about it this way. As a person grows older, they tend to atrophy, they tend to shrink, they tend to lose lean muscle. And not just muscle, but lean organ mass. That's all the organs. And the organs control your blood chemistry. Now, as we age and these problems or these changes happen, we tend to have higher rates of all causes of morbidity and mortality that suck the quality of our life from us and also our lifespan. Medicine and science has proven that anything that you do that increases your lean organ mass is generally associated with living longer and better with less disease. So if you know what your lean body mass is and your metabolic rate, you can find out what new normal you need beyond a doctor simply telling you, oh, well, your weight is normal for your height and your race. You can go further and find out if you have an optimal body composition relative to your health problem. So for example, someone with cancer will tend to lose lean organ mass, and loss of lean organ mass basically predicts death or loss of health. So if we were to feed that cancer patient various nutrients that increase their lean body mass, then generally speaking, that would be associated with a positive outcome, with a good response to whatever they were doing. Now, chemotherapy, radiation, these may be necessary, according to some, but they're not associated with dramatic improvements in lean body mass. We know that that's where diet comes in. You know, most people who succumb to cancer tend to die of the secondary effects of cancer, like infections and malnutrition. Both infections and malnutrition are managed well through intelligent, individualized, and personalized foods or food plan and nutritional supplementation. And as far as nutritional supplementation, a person with cancer or autoimmune disease or heart disease or any health problem you can name, if you were to measure the levels of various nutrients in their blood, they might be normal, but because of their health problem, and for them to get over that health problem or to manage it more favorably, they might need levels of nutrition that far exceed the normal ranges, which would then fall into what I'm calling the optimal ranges. So before I end today, I think what I'll do is review some additional tests, and you can review this all, by the way, by listening to the show again or parts of it posted on my blog at integratednutritionny.com or blooddetective.com. And if you'd like me to explore any other show topics, shoot me an email at info@blooddetective.com. You can also call me with questions or to meet with me as a patient if you'd like at 914-552-1442. So let me review some essential tests that are commonly done among many different healthcare specialties, which I reviewed earlier is not ideal. You want them all done at once so you can really see their interrelationships that have strong nutritional implications and health implications. And you could learn more about these sorts of tests if you listen to my past show called The Top 10 Tests That Could Save Your Life. One of them is body composition. You simply do not want to be able to fit into your pants if you're lean. You want a certain ratio of lean mass to muscle to fat. The only way to know where you're at in your metabolic rate is to measure it and do a body composition test, also known as a bioimpedance test. That is fundamental for figuring out any dietary approach to your health. And it really escapes me how any nutritional professional can provide nutritional advice without first measuring this. The next group of tests involve checking whether or not you absorb what you're eating normally. If you're over 50 or if you're younger than 50 with either genetic malabsorption disorders or other health problems that might otherwise affect how you absorb what you're eating, you need certain absorption tests or malabsorption tests. And also, depending on whatever health problem you have or you want to avoid, that would narrow down the list of tests that let you know about absorption. Again, a very fundamental thing. The other test that I think is essential for optimal health as opposed to normal health is measuring blood or venous pH. So pH refers to the acid-base balance in the body. And most physicians do not measure pH levels because they're taught in schools that the only people we need to care about pH levels are those that have dramatically high or those that have dramatically low pHs, and they're generally in hospital settings. But before they're in hospital settings, they're not in hospital settings. So my suggestion is get your pH changed, because there are what is known as the walking wounded individuals out there that seem well or have health problems, but no physicians or healthcare providers have related it to problems with their pH. If your pH is too low, that's no good. If your pH is too high, that's no good. And there are all manner of ways of modifying your pH depending on the cause. And causes of pH might be due to problems with your respiratory system or problems with any other area of your metabolism. And it's important to figure out which one or both might be relating to abnormalities in your pH. If the pH is too low, then that tends to promote degeneration of a certain type. And a pH that's too high is also not good for various reasons. But sometimes having a higher pH, higher than the normal, actually helps conditions that are inflammatory, like practically every health problem, but certainly certain cancers. There are studies that show that if one maintains a pH that's towards the alkaline end of the pH scale. That means less acid. That might actually slow the progress of cancer and reduce spreading, or what they call metastatic spread of cancer. So pH, a very important test. Another important test that I like to provide is something called homocysteine. Homocysteine is a test that lets us know if the body is properly using B6, B12, and folic acid, which are important for many dozens of reactions in the body. So homocysteine. And then another one of importance is C-reactive protein. CRP is a test that's sadly not done routinely, but is covered by all insurance. And CRP is up there in terms of predictability to death and disease, as is vitamin D. Meaning, the lower your vitamin D, the higher your risk of dying of anything. So, of course, vitamin D would be added to this list. It would be D3. And C-reactive protein, cardio, so it's called CRP cardio, is also very highly predictive of overall morbidity and mortality. So you might be able to see that if you do a variety of these tests, and there are others, but if you do these tests together and you normalize them, you're making a real statistical difference in your health span and your disease risk. So C-reactive protein was the last one I mentioned. Another one of importance is ferritin. Ferritin is an inflammatory marker potentially, and it also lets us know about the body's iron storage. It's also a cancer marker and a marker of inflammation, as I mentioned, and has many, many different nutritional implications, both dietary and through nutritional supplements and lifestyle, just as all the other tests I've just mentioned do. Then measuring something called arterial stiffness, not clogging of arteries, but stiffness, a technique where sound waves are sent into the capillaries of the finger, causing those sound waves to reverberate throughout the blood vessels in the entire body. And this has, the person has no sensation of this. And depending on the bounce off of those waves on the blood vessels, we can tell how hard they are. They might be hard, consistent with an 85-year-old, and you might be 55 years old. So if you take the right doses of omega-3 fats and exercise correctly and eat right, you want to know that your efforts of reducing hardening of the arteries or arteriosclerosis are actually working. So again, we've covered that there is normal in healthcare, and then there is optimal. Normal's comparing you to average. Average may not be good enough. We've also discussed specific laboratory tests, what their average ranges are, what are called clinical ranges on blood work, which are figured out by looking at average individuals, which are not necessarily healthy individuals, compared to optimal ranges, which are based, for the most part, on healthy individuals. We've talked about the concept of figuring out your new normal and not merely comparing you to average. And we reiterated the concept that if you're told that your testing is normal or does not explain why you are not well, then you might require a new normal. I hope you'll join me for all of the other Ask the Blood Detective shows. My name is Dr. Michael Wald, and I can be reached at 914-552-1442. Have a wonderful day.
Show you.